Welcome to the Almost Forgotten Podcast, and I am your host, Professor Daryl Brackeen Jr., and it is my privilege and honor to be your guide through this Black History Lecture Series. This is episode 4 of this wonderful series. You can find it on Apple Podcasts, iHeartRadio, and on YouTube by following us at Brackeen TV. I am the author of the book, The Almost Forgotten, America's First Black American Congressman, which can be found at Amazon.com and Barnes & Noble online for your purchase and support. This has been a miraculous journey through the Almost Forgotten podcast. We are in our second season. So hard to believe that this is our second season. And we've been able to successfully start this Black History Lecture Series with so much support. And it's at this point that I have to say thank you. Thank you to each and every one of you who have followed the journey on Brackeen TV as we begin to build momentum around ensuring Black history is never forgotten. And certainly this is my active way to ensure Black history is not erased. So for those that have joined us on this journey, look, if you actively believe that Black history is American history, right now, I need you to like and share and subscribe to our page. Let the community know about this active history that is happening right here on Brackeen TV, and knowing that this is history that most certainly isn't always taught in K-12. And if it is, we have to shout out and thank all of those wonderful history teachers that's ensuring the incorporation of such vital history as this. So we're gonna jump right in, folks. No need to belabor the point. I know many of you are excited about being here. And today's episode is a vitally important title that I wanted to ensure was clear. It's when the African kings arise. So today we're going to highlight three kings who rose to the challenge. They had their successes, and some had their ultimate failures, which unfortunately ends up in their ultimate demise. But the one thing that we can say is that they absolutely, unequivocally pushed back on the enslavement of African people. And they were able to successfully, and sometimes not so successfully, ensure the strategic diplomatic results of something most remarkable. It's when the African kings arise. So we have to introduce some characters to the story, some antagonists in particular, that often get highlighted from a very interesting perspective. But I need you to see them as individuals who were on their own personal journeys of essentially trying to find and take natural resources from a place in a land that was not their own. And briefly, we introduced an individual by the name of Paulo Diaz de Navales. We also highlighted an individual, but essentially the backing of the Portuguese kingdom to invade, kidnap, and take away the natural resources of the land of Africa. In particular, we'll see an entryway from the western shore towards the central most part of Africa. Paulo Diaz de Navales is known as a Portuguese explorer. I would say that he was a successful pirate. And a pirated in the sense that he had an insatiable curiosity to discover, not just for the sake of discovery, but to discover for the sake of conquering and ultimately enslaving of many African people and taking the natural resources from the land that was not his own. Of course, he didn't do this by himself. He did it alongside with the Kingdom of Portugal, as well as the Catholic Church, in particular Pope Nicholas V, who we already reviewed in a previous lesson. Actually, how did I forget this? You should stop right now if you have not seen episodes 1, 2, and 3, because you won't absolutely know what I'm talking about. There's no way you could know at this present point, because we've laid the foundation for our understanding of the context and the players. In particular, you'll hear me use the word systematic racism. I don't want you to be triggered or charged, because there's a really strong understanding as to why I'm using that framework. So stop at this point, go back to episodes 1, 2, and 3, and get that clarity and explanation, and come on back. This episode will be here for your viewing. So getting back to Pope Nicholas V, we find that he wrote a papal decree essentially giving the blessings to these explorers, so-called explorers, to go into the lands for the sake of the conversion to Christianity. So we'll find the quest of conquering on one end. Now, we must present the opposite end of the story, and it's the people of the land, the people who were there. We know that humanity begins on the African continent, so they are close to the very early civilization and the advanced civilizations. These were not people who were clueless. These were people who were technically trained and educated and had a strong understanding in terms of diplomatic policy and treaties, in which we hear the arising and the raising up of our first king for today. Now, in the context of the use of the word of a king, I want to be clear that we will be using the term Ngolo. Ngolo is the title for king. And when we get to queen, and yes, there is a queen, we will use the term Nzinga. All right. So we are now going to find our place in Central Africa in the kingdom of Ngando, which we know as present day Angola. And then we will find next to the kingdom of Ngango is the kingdom of Mantamba. And we will understand the historical dynamics and the connections between the Portuguese colonizing and creating what essentially becomes the kingdom of Congo. You'll hear this in multiple contexts, and sometimes it's confusing depending on the source that you're reading. So you should know that officially it becomes the Kingdom of Kongo under the rulership of the Portuguese leader Alfonso I. So that we have that clarity in mind. So let me introduce you to our first king during this story. The first king that we're introducing to this story is Ngolo Kia Samba. Ngolo Kia Samba ruled over the kingdom of Ngando, and he created a centralized political power that was to be rivaled amongst many nations and kingdoms during this time. He was a very wise man and very sharp in terms of diplomacy and treaty making, and even the development of alliances of local tribes and kingdoms and combining them. And essentially they all had a seat at the table at his kingdom, of course, under his rulership. Now, you should know that African tradition is vitally important, and that the raising up and the understanding of ancestry and ensuring that honoring the ancestors and the traditions that they had before them is vitally important, which is the reason why I sit here today, raising up and ensuring that our ancestors and the traditions of heritage, integrity, and bringing down that forward knowledge into the present moment is vitally important. So you should know his kingdom had a slew of historians and trained individuals. Now, in his quest of ensuring the expansion of his own kingdom, he got ahead of the Portuguese explorers in their coming to the African continent, and they went to the Portugal government through the Catholic Church. The Catholic Church had sent priests ahead of the missions of the explorers to set up for conversions and missions during this place, and they were able to send a group of young people to be educated by the Catholic Church and understanding many of the educational translations, and they eventually began to convert. And it was upon sending this group of individuals to Portugal to learn, come back, and of course the king learned of what's going on in Europe and so on, he strategically makes the kingdom convert to Christianity very early on, because he gets wind that the papal decree is seeking to convert individuals into Christians, and as part of this conversion, enslavement could be done. But if the king got ahead of this, you can't enslave a Christian. That was the logic behind it, and it was great strategy. But then you begin to press upon the setting up of the systematic racism and play, that this was not truly the reason why. It was just the cover-up, so to speak, of religion. So what you're going to find here over these years is that converted Christians on the African continent end up ultimately on slave ships of Portuguese explorers, and then they're sent over to South America, in particular Brazil. So Brazil is the landing place because it's essentially directly across from where the Kingdom of Congo was set up. So it's a direct route to South America in the early years. So N'Golo Kiasamba, during his reign, he not only was able to convert the kingdom to Christianity, but he created diplomatic trade and agreements with the Portuguese. So the explorers, their hands were kind of tied, so they had to be very tactful and strategic about their engagement and their interactions, and to also save face for when they needed to essentially kidnap the Africans from the continent. So what you'll find is Paulo Dias Nivola and all of his troops and so on, he begins to hire mercenaries from enemy tribes of the Ngando kingdom, and they are the ones that essentially have these random skirmishes and attacks on the kingdom. And after every attack, of course, enslavement would incur. You need to go back to a previous episode in which we explain the traditional route concerning warfare and enslavement. So please go back. You'll have a better understanding on that. Now, we see that the Portuguese are able to approach the king and essentially say they had no idea what was going on and that they were not directly involved with the situation. So, you know, it's really a game of cat and mouse that begins to ensue during this time frame. Now, there comes a point in time where N'Golo Kiasamba, his reign becomes one of the most pivotal periods within this history. But as every king and every ruler of any major nation, death happens. So, due to the expiration of his life, a major transition is about. If you're like me, you like shows shows like the Game of Thrones and the Lord of the Rings and many other of these shows that show leadership in constant transition because of warfare or whatever is happening during that time. And every time you see a major transition happen on any of these shows, you'll see that at the depth of a leader, all chaos breaks loose. This is what I need you to visualize between every transition that is mentioned from now until the end of this lecture, because essentially at the death of a leader, the Portuguese, they come in and they try to take over the situation, and essentially they do take over certain parts of the land coming from the west, slowly but surely. So I just want you to note that in every transition, there is chaos that ensues. Now that the king has died, his son assumes the throne. And he is reigned and named King Ingola Kelugi Kia Sambad. And in the tradition of his father, of course, and the reign of his father, he goes by the name of Ingola Mbandi. All right. So there's a tradition to keep the father's name and keep that lineage going so that you have an understanding of the lineage through the name. Now, this is a crucial period of history. And thankfully, this second king that arose to power is also in fierce resistance, and he is very learned, and he paid very close attention to the reign of his father, that he was able to not only sustain what was established, but advance further in the development of alliances and treaties with local tribes and the incorporation of additional kingdoms, which also means additional people power in terms of the weapons, in terms of the military prowess. And what I actually wanted to mention about weapons was the traditional weapon of the Ngando kingdom was that of the battle axe. So you'll see this reference a little later in the show, once we start highlighting the military tactics and what weapons they had available for them during this time period. The traditional weapon for the Ngando people was the battle axe. Therefore, under the reign of Ingola Mbandi Kujilanji, he continued to ensure that diplomacy and the resistance of the Portuguese ensued. He actually establishes a historic connection with the Dutch. And the Dutch is another colonial player that is on the chessboard, that's very present on the African continent. And they are extremely upset with the Portuguese for taking over some pieces of land that they claimed was theirs. And the Dutch had strong motive to support the kingdom of Ngando, and whoever was able to show that they had the military strength to take on the Portuguese at that time. So this was a very smart diplomatic move. After hearing of this diplomatic move and strategic alliance with the Dutch secretly, supposedly, the Portuguese finds out, and it is at that point that the Portuguese, through the use of mercenaries, essentially tricked the king into believing they were going on a alliance trip, and he was murdered. And of course, internally, there were suspicions about people that had a seat at the table with strategic alliances, because of course they wanted the throne from him. This particular Ingola had a son and two daughters. And the son and one of the eldest daughter would essentially be at his right hand during of his reign, even in their childhood, they were very present. He had them very close and ensured that they were at every very important meeting, and they met everyone they needed to meet in order to be successful in case of a transition, even at their young age. And we will highlight them shortly. But N'Gola Mbandi Kujilani is probably the last male leader that was able to sustain the work of his father, and not only sustain it, but expand it. Now, of course, after his murder of the traitors, the throne traditionally is passed down through and to the son during this time. So again, after the murder of the king, following tradition, the son takes on the throne. And of course, you all should know that this is not in a regular transference of power. This is the way that many cultures across the planet Earth had dominated in terms of the patriarchal system and the passing down of one son to the next. So this is simply following a cultural tradition of patriarchy that far existed this time period. So when this son, however, took the throne, yes, he was aware of many of the situations that were at hand, but he did not follow the leadership of his father, N'Gola Kilobo Kia Kansenda. And that created a problematic situation. So essentially, you'll find that his leadership was very short because the Portuguese essentially came into the kingdom and took over the capital because of the divisions of the tribes and the many nations and the backstabbing that had just occurred. And of course, the son ends up in exile, leaving his sister actually on the soil of the country. So he essentially abandons his position, and as a result, and because of the shame of it all, he ends up committing suicide while in exile, therefore leaving the throne to the one who would become the first queen of a great dynasty. And they would refer to her as Nzinga, which means queen. Her name is Nzinga Anna. And we will reserve an entire episode, because she's that great, we're going to reserve an entire episode to Nzinga Anna, because her story and what she does is vitally important to the continuance of the expansion and the resistance of Africans and queen of a major location of Central Africa. So this has been the Almost Forgotten Podcast, the Black History Lecture Series, Episode 4. Again, please like, please share, and please subscribe to Brackeen TV anywhere on any social media platform. This is vitally important to know that Black history is American history, and we cannot know where we're going until we know where we've been. Until next time, have a good one.